Hey everybody, Jason Burmis here from The Road, and recently I watched this 30-minute plus interview with Yuval Noah Harari, and it's from 2020, pre-COVID-1984, right on the heels of him leaving Davos. Now, what I found really interesting about this interview is that he makes some very truthful points, although you can tell that he is a staunch atheist, and he, like many of these other authoritarians, continues to push the climate change agenda and a global fix for everything. In fact, although we're not going to play this portion of the interview, he discussed how Donald Trump's 2020 Davos speech was really like he was running for president in Ohio. And I've actually played a lot of that speech because it was spot on. It took on the climate change alarmist authoritarians and said, we know what they want. They want more power and control. And honestly, I thought it was one of Trump's strongest speeches. On top of that, he also reveals himself when he talks about how humans, in his eyes, are already gods at the ends. He talks about totalitarian governments, and I really feel like we need to put more of what he says in context because a lot of it is the truth. But it is tarnished with, in my opinion, a viewpoint that is outwardly ideal. However, when he talks about warning people of the coming technologies and those that may have power, he is offering the very solution that will cause our enslavement. So, this one's broken down to a little less than 10 minutes. There's a lot of subsections in it. Let's get it going. Thumbs it up, subscribe, and share. And let's hear what Yuval Noah Harari has to say about politicians. Again, he's being starkly honest here because he says that all of the things that we believe in, whether it be religion or corporations, are based in stories.
Each nation has its own story. Usually I would say that a leader that would tell the whole truth about his or her nation or country will never win any elections. Because the truth is usually complicated, is usually inconvenient, unpleasant, has all kinds of dark sides. Mm-hmm. And that's usually people don't like it very much. They want to have a nicer view of themselves in itself.
So there's that subsection. Think about what he just said there. He basically said politics can never be honest because if you're too truthful, you can't be elected. He also mentioned what I would say is very true, that the truth has a lot of dark sides and is complicated. Yet this man oversimplifies things constantly when it's into his agenda, okay? And the next thing he's going to say, I wanted to play because of the quote-unquote Christian nationalism controversy via Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now, I think that honestly, she's done a better job than the vast majority people in government by shedding light on some of the darker truths that Yuval just talked about. And on top of that, she's one of the very few people to stand up against the Ukrainian-Russia propaganda. Yet, she has been demonized as a literal quote-unquote Nazi for her Christian nationalism. Now, although Yuval here ain't no fan of organized religion and especially not Christianity, what he says about nationalism is completely contradictory to what the media narrative that is trying to paint Marjorie Taylor Greene as a bigot and a racist. Listen to this.
If we understand nationalism correctly, it's a very good thing. You know, some people imagine that nationalism is about hating foreigners, mm-hmm. and that's very bad. It causes wars and the persecution of minorities and so forth.
Yeah, that's kind of what they're running on CNN and MSNBC and CBS and ABC and all the rest of the mainstream Mockingbird media Muppets out there. They're demonizing her for using that term. So here Yuval and I are actually in agreement.
But nationalism really is about loving your compatriots.
You refer to suffering, but you say emotions are sophisticated biochemical
algorithm.
Look at that. He cut her off. He knows his lines so well. So again, we don't have a soul. There's really nothing special about human beings. We just happen to be the lucky evolution on the planet. And your emotional states are nothing more than highly sophisticated chemical algorithms making us human beings really hackable animals, even though, as you'll find out later, he believes we are the god of this world already. Listen to this.
I don't know what to think of that. Is there no me then? Am I just a collection of biochemical reactions and neurons firing off on one another?
There is much more, which is consciousness.
And what I love what he says here about consciousness is they don't know what consciousness is. Now, the part I do cut out at the end is he says, even though we don't know what consciousness is, I'm not going to start believing any hooey or making conjecture. So in other words, there always has to be some kind of a scientific explanation outside of intelligent design or a god or higher force, according to Yuval. Let's let him keep talking though about these hackable animals and algorithms.
Experiences, we understand very well, not very well, relatively well compared to previous times, the body and the brain and the neurobiological processes and all the biochemistry.
Almost.
Yes, but how does all that create subjective experiences of pain and pleasure and love and hate? We don't really understand. It's, I would say, the greatest lacuna in an understanding not just of life, but even of the universe. The greatest riddle science faces in the 21st century is the riddle of consciousness. We can look at what's happening in a person's brain and predict with a very high level of certainty what that person is feeling. We can manipulate it by changing either the biochemistry in the brain or even directly making neurons fire or not fire. We can cause people to change what they feel. So there is a very close link there, but we should also be humble and say we don't understand everything. We still don't understand.
Yeah.
How is it that when billions of neurons fire, how does that translate into the subjective experience of pain or love? We don't understand that.
See, again, he's out there saying, look, we can manipulate people. There are biochemical things we can do. We can predict things with a certain accuracy. Consciousness, we don't understand. Love, we don't understand. But again, we're in a society that for now decades has sold you pills, many of the times SSRIs, as the solutions to many of these problems. And now the biomedical big pharma MK Ultra-esque tyranny is moving forward into what? Nanotechnology and a biomedical tyranny we could only imagine.
But as you say, we can manipulate some of it.
Yes.
We are hackable humans. Is
hackable animals, even.
Hackable animals.
He doesn't even like to call us humans. His books are titled Sapien all the time. He hates that human term. Why is that? Why is that, Yuval?
Yeah, that's not a very reassuring thought. Who might manipulate us and how far can this be taken?
There are many dangers here. In order to hack a human being means to understand you better than you understand yourself, to know more about you. And whoever can do that can there not just predict what you will do and choose, but also manipulate you.
This is what advertisers do and what Facebook and Google is after, but yeah. Maybe also Russia tried in the election scandal?
Throughout history, people always wanted to do it, predict and manipulate what other people are doing and thinking.
Mm-hmm. Not throughout history, all the way up until present day. It's not just history. And he, you know, I'm being kind of coy there, but she mentions Facebook, Google, governments. It's a predatory class that wants a command and control new world order. And guys like this, who tell you that everything is a story, want to sell you on a great narrative, right? Via a new world order agenda to accept their great reset. This guy is setting you up from everything he claims to be warning you about.
But now we have far more sophisticated tools than ever before. To hack a human being, you need a lot of biological knowledge, a lot of data, and a lot of computing power to make sense of all that.
It's all there now.
And in the past it wasn't, now it's there. Now, at least some corporations and governments have enough data and computing power to know me better than I know myself. To know my political views, to know my sexual preferences, my deepest fears and desires. And that's a huge danger, because it means that not only you can manipulate people, you can actually, for the first time, build a totalitarian regime that can follow the entire population all the time and know not just what people are doing, but even what people are feeling and thinking.
So there he's like, wow, this is really dangerous. And here he's going to admit that you could actually have two separate parts of the species eventually with this technology.
Two classes, in a way, where there's a super elite and a superfluous class that's left behind by the advances in technology, artificial intelligence as well.
Completely. I mean, the amount of data now and the sophistication of AI that analyzes the data is such that this is now the key for controlling countries and economies. So if we don't take action and political action to make sure that the benefits of AI are distributed between everybody, and nobody, no single corporation or...
Here's that equity agenda. And they're acting, again, they're acting like, you know, no single entity is going to be able to dominate this field. But we already have an upper echelon, a military industrial complex based in the executive within the executive, the continuity of government liars, if you will, that have done many of the experiments and much of the research and gone to really probably unimaginable and grotesque levels to do so, that track, trace, and database is really over. That's over. We're already established track, trace, and database. And the next level will be what he refers to as under the skin in other interviews, although not this one.
Small group accumulates all the data and all the power that comes with it. If we don't take this kind of action, we could see the greatest inequality that ever existed.
There's the third element we should get into. You refer to Davos. Greta Thunberg was there as well. Climate change.
Yeah.
One big story that everybody should maybe rally around. And
see this? We should all be rallying around the story of climate change. And these people realize that, you know, peace for health and health for peace and acting benevolent and saying they want to save the world and Mother Earth is a great cover for command and control. And this is where you find out Yuval is really on board with all of their agenda. And when I say their agenda, I'm talking about that predatory class that talks about not only population control, population stabilization, Malthus 101, but bringing us into a virtual age where people will eventually upload their consciousness with a whole lot of transhumanism in between. And their modus operandi is what? Carbon dioxide, carbon control, carbon markets, carbon credits, social credit scores, blockchain technology, food programs built on the blockchain through these globalist organizations such as the IMF, and mouthpieces like Davos.
No such unity. There is a lack of a good story about climate change, is what you say. How come?
It's much more difficult to get people interested in climate change than, say, in terrorism, mainly almost for biological reasons. Until very recently, climate was not our responsibility. We couldn't control and change the climate.
So again, you know, he's always going back to, oh, it's not, it's above, he'll say it's above our pay grade. We couldn't control and change the climate. Actually, if we talk about weather weapons, we've been doing that for decade upon decade upon decade upon decade. Again, that post-World War II model that we've talked about again and again. And, you know, I just started listening to the Pentagon's brain on the way out here to Virginia. Got through three chapters up to chapter four. And Annie Jacobson lays it down for you. You know, DARPA and those programs are based on the Manhattan Project model of compartmentalization. That's what it's all about. Keep the vast majority of people in the dark about what they're working on. Tell them stories about how they're heroes. And meanwhile, what's happening? You're building weapons of mass destruction. You know, the ones they fear-mongered us about during their story of a war on terror.
You know, when we were apes in the African savannah, of course we cared about the climate. If there is drought, it's very bad.
Because, you know, we were apes. Again, there is no debate. You were a monkey. It was above your pay grade. You couldn't control the climate, even though there was ice ages and desertification then, and vast swings naturally in the climate. Now, because humans are gods on this planet and we're the dominant species, somehow we can control the climate. By what? By what? Controlling the carbon. In other words, controlling the populace.
But we are not programmed by evolution to think that we can do something about it. So, you know, if somebody comes from the opposite tribe to kill us, okay, we can do something about it. It immediately gets our attention. Mm-hmm. But the climate, that's beyond, above our pay level, as they say.
And we still feel like that.
We still feel that way. So, in a way, you see a headline, terrorist attack kills five, immediately your attention is drawn. You see a headline, new research indicates that CO2 levels in the, and you're already lost.
So we can't help it, really, is what you're saying.
We are sophisticated beings. We can understand that these things are now within our power. They are our responsibility. If we do nothing, the results in the near future would be terrible.
So again, fear-mongering, saying if we don't do something, the results will be terrible, and they keep saying this and that. Oh, it's going to increase this much, and the ocean levels are going to go up this much. Johnny mother truckin' nonsense. And you notice he mentioned terrorism, because terrorism was more successful, because we do have that innate knowledge that we could be killed or murdered, and that is a great fear of by another person or group. We don't think that about the sun, because the sun is one of the great life forces on the planet. We don't think that about oxygen. We don't think that about carbon dioxide. Again, because they're one of the major life forces, not death forces, on the planet.
And I would say that the most important thing is to realize we can do something. Some people think, well, it's too late, and what do you want us to do? Go back living in caves? But the magic number, I would say, is something like 2%.
So this is totally made up, by the way, what he's saying here. Now, when we say go back to live in caves, they would much rather put us into compact cities, limit what we can eat. Again, not because it's going to save the planet, because it makes us more manageable. It makes us the hackable animals he talks about. And he acts like 2% of global GDP, which is the defense budget. Again, equating all this stuff with war and the Department of Defense and our safety and our fear of terrorism. And somehow by spending that money, that 2%, right, of the GDP, the global GDP, what they spend on war, we're going to save the planet. Okay, buddy, it's a made-up number. There's no science behind it. Yet Yuval here is the Mr. Science guy. He's the transhumanist future man we should all be listening to.
2% of global GDP is enough to deal with the climate crisis. If the world community invested just 2% of global GDP, we solve it. We are talking about far more primitive AI, not the kind you see in the movies. Primitive AI is enough to completely disrupt the economy, to replace humans in many jobs. You don't need the super AI from the science fiction movies. To replace human drivers, even human doctors in diagnosing disease, we are very close to it.
I want you to realize what he's saying here. When we're really talking about artificial intelligence, they're selling you on that Hollywood image, again, of Westworld and, you know, Upload and those type of things, where AI is just supreme. It's unrecognizable from a human if we'd like it to be. But what he's telling you is, look, for what they want to do with it, with how they, the predator class, want to manage the world, AI doesn't have to be that great to replace humans. And you notice he mentioned doctors. Talk about biomedical tyranny when you don't even have a human with empathy to possibly go against trusting the science. Again, robots do what they're programmed to, but what he's telling you here is, as they push a UBI, by the way, universal basic income, and they tell you you're a useless eater and your carbon has to be controlled, is that, look, even our primitive AI, not the stuff you're seeing out there, is good enough to do you in at the workplace.
So will be new jobs, of course, but this raises a lot of questions about how do you retrain people? Whether you invest the profits from the AI in retraining people, maybe in other countries. You know, part of the danger of the AI arms race, with the USA and China leading the race, is that the AI revolution will create immense wealth in a few countries which are leading this revolution, whereas other countries could completely collapse. So we need a kind of global safety net that if, you know, what happens once it's cheaper to produce textiles and cars in California than in Mexico? We are quite close to that point.
We are close to that point. But you notice again, his solution is give more power to globalism. Give more power to the Davos crowd. You catching it? Oh, the solution is more power towards globalism, more consolidation of power. That's how we're going to solve it. Bull, it would be great if we had cars produced in the United States again. That'd be great for us Americans. I don't necessarily think it would be bad for Mexicans either.
All humans should realize that with regard to the planet and to the other animals, we are already gods.
Oh, so there's the last line. On this earth, according to Yuval, we are already gods. I disagree. Folks, if you want to support the broadcast, I am on the road. I could use your support. I wish I was in my studio right now. I've got a pretty good little makeshift studio for the next few days. It may be very difficult to live stream. That's why we're recording this one and then premiering it. But we're going to be on the road. I'm going to be speaking after this weekend, the following weekend, over in Batavia, New York, as part of the Reawaken America Tour. Extremely excited to do so. I'm going to be talking about what? The deep state, continuity of government, Bohemian Grove, the Manhattan Project, signature reduction, and much more, tying it in together. Subjects that if you watch this show, you damn well know about, because we focus on them big time. Guys, The Buy Me a Coffee is below. We got other ways to support the broadcast. Rockfin is one of them, $9.99 a month or $99.99 for the year. I absolutely love you guys, and I will see you all on the flip side.